You're in the loop. We're here to discuss the ups, downs, and sideways of the sport of figure skating, and maybe give you +5 GOE along the way. Let's introduce this week's hosts.
Hi, I'm Lei. I've been hibernating from figure skating for probably the last, I don't even know how many months. You can find me on Twitter at AxelSandwich.
Hi, I'm Yokita, and I am popping out of my K-pop hole to talk about what on earth is going on in figure skating in this current pandemic time. You can find me on Twitter at Liliorum. What on earth's going on?
One of the weirdest off-seasons that we've ever experienced, and that obviously is due to COVID, but also just due to, I guess, the way that the figure skating world has kind of gone about addressing COVID, which is to say, not at all, but also kind of. I think the main segment of this episode is probably just going to be us talking extensively about the 2021 GP series. In other words, I think why we think, at least, that based on everything that we have been seeing so far, why it should really be cancelled. And I think before we say all of that, I think first off, it's really important to caveat that we obviously are aware that there's an entire economy that revolves around figure skating as a sport, right? So skaters obviously participating in the sport have already lost a lot of income through, ice shows, and, a lot of their side income streams such as coaching and stuff have obviously been impacted by COVID. But we know that with elite skaters, they obviously can't just stop training and wait out this pandemic. And obviously, in accordance to that, there are a lot of training costs and expenses that have to happen in order to make that happen. So that's definitely a financial incentive to continue to compete and obviously keep practicing the sport. We know that there are livelihoods of federation and ISU officials, TV, media broadcasters, advertisers and sponsors, all of these sort of people and jobs revolve around keeping the sport going. So it's totally understandable that there is a desire to try as much as possible to keep competitions going and to basically keep skating alive even within these COVID times.
Moreover, the Grand Prix series isn't just a now issue. We also have to think about the future of skating. The Grand Prix final, which has been postponed, was originally meant to be a test venue for the Beijing 2022 Olympics, which is still currently up in the air as to whether or not that event will even be held. Also, we know that the Junior Grand Prix has been canceled, but this makes it more difficult for junior skaters to get the experience that they need, especially junior skaters who were maybe hoping to instead debut this year in order to avoid debuting in an Olympic season so they could get the senior experience and make a case for them to actually get to compete in the Olympics next season instead of having to try and make that argument while debuting as a senior next year.
So there's definitely a lot of reasons to sort of feel that this season happening is a very important one. But I think on balance of all of the factors for and against having the season going ahead, we do really question the ethics of continuing to push ahead with the GP as the ISU have sort of been indicating that they're doing. So I think in order to sort of tackle and break down this issue, the first thing to really establish is what are the risks of COVID for athletes, right? Because I think obviously all of these measures, etc., are being put into place to try and minimize the risks of athletes catching the virus and also passing it on to sort of the people around them. So I think the first element or facet to really address is the long-term damage that COVID poses for athletes. So I think commonly there was the initial understanding that COVID was relatively low risk for healthy young individuals, but it is really important to know that we really have no idea whether that is completely true, especially because the virus is still rampant and likely mutating as it goes through, like, so many people and infections. So what we have noticed, though, is a worrying trend and a worrying sort of outcome for a certain subset of people who have had COVID and nonetheless recovered. So, for example, we've had COVID long haulers, which is a growing sort of community of people who have suffered from the virus, but have continued to suffer lingering symptoms months after technically recovering. And we know that some of the symptoms that have been reported are of particular risk to athletes in particular. So things like brain fog, continued heart and lung problems or diminished lung capacity, fever, exhaustion, all of these things are very, very dangerous for people who make the health of their bodies and the ability for their bodies to do these high-risk maneuvers their entire career. So we also know in studies from Utah, for example, that 15% of college athletes with COVID showed signs of heart inflammation even after they'd recovered. On the flip side, we have had some professors like Kentaro Iwata from Kobe University who have downplayed the concerns with their athletes, saying that in his study, the symptoms tended to be mild and haven't significantly affected performance. But I think also it's important to note that athletes aren't the only ones affected by COVID. We have athletes' coaches that they regularly interact with, many of whom are elderly. We have volunteers, officials, audience members, and the local community, all of whom have to gather and closely interact in order to make Grand Prix series and competitions happen. So we definitely know that there are a lot broader implications for an athlete catching COVID than simply the process of them recovering from it. And so I think in sport especially, it should really be taken seriously as a risk, not only to themselves and their long-term career prospects, but also to everyone who is supporting and interacting with them in the process of carrying out a competition. And I think also just a side note, but the psychological effects of competing within this atmosphere of tension, uncertainty, and fear in the general COVID times is really something that shouldn't be overlooked. I think we can all probably attest to the emotional and mental impacts of just even living in COVID times. So doubly so, I think, for athletes.
So as we all know, the Grand Prix series is currently positioned to go ahead. And we have had assignments released with a lot of withdrawals since. These Grand Prix series events are basically glorified nationals. Majority of the competitors there are from their home nation, notwithstanding IDF, which does have competitors from across Europe. These competitions do not count towards world standings, but currently it's unclear whether or not the scores from these competitions will count towards personal bests or season's bests. The officials and judges for these competitions will also be from the whole countries, which really gives an indicator that we will probably see a lot of score inflation because of this. They've also divided the events here into qualified and unqualified categories, and the prize money is halved for events that don't actually have at least one full group of skaters with at least three skaters teams in the top 24 season's best or world standings lists. So I'm sorry, NHK, I stand field. Also, the Grand Prix final is postponed, which honestly, even if it wasn't postponed, I'd be very confused how it would actually happen. I understand the reason why it was postponed. However, given that this is not a standard Grand Prix series, we don't have skaters competing in multiple events, it is very unclear to me if a Grand Prix final were to happen, how the ISU would properly determine which skaters would actually make it there.
Absolutely. And I think it's also pretty telling that in their whole communications around the Grand Prix series still happening, that they have no guidelines for how these qualifications will happen. It seems to be a sort of, we'll wait and see, which is never very promising. So the second element that we kind of want to discuss is also the logistics of it. So I think when the ISU first announced that the Grand Prix series were likely to go ahead as usual, the primary confusion was around how on earth international skaters or people traveling into those venues are going to realistically compete, because many countries still require a 14-day quarantine with no access to training or ice. And I think since the assignments have come out, it definitely does seem like the differences between the qualified and unqualified competitions and the prize money involved and requirements may have incentivized sort of federations requesting assignments to be more international than they really ought to be. So logistically, we know that a lot of teams don't train in the countries that they represent. So logistically, I think we can see this, especially in the ice dancers who are based in the Ice Academy of Montreal in Canada. So we know that a lot of the world's top ice dance teams all train together there. And so therefore, it would have probably made sense from a safety, logistic, and workability perspective to really have all of those teams competing at Skate Canada, because it's in Canada and presumably a lot easier to travel internally within a country than to fly out. But, you know, we have seen definitely teams like Papadakis and Cizeron being assigned to IDF. We've seen Hawaiik and Baker and Hubble Donahue all assigned to Skate America. So really, like, it does really speak to the fact that there are vested interests in having these athletes compete in key events in their home countries. But conversely, that really does increase the risks so much for these athletes who now have to travel internationally. So I'm still struggling with thinking about how Papadakis and Cizeron are going to go to France and, like, presumably isolate for a period of time in their hotel rooms without any access to training and facilities, and then be expected to compete in a Grand Prix series.
It's extremely mind-boggling, and it's impractical. Some, like, honestly, as you said, some of these assignments clearly don't make sense. Like, in addition to Papadakis and Cizeron, Ekaterina Kurakova, who is currently in Poland, was assigned to Skate Canada, and she has withdrawn because she obviously could not get to Skate Canada from Poland. Junhwan Cha of South Korea, who usually trains in Canada but is also currently in South Korea, was assigned to Skate Canada.
And presumably the Korean Federation just lost the sheet of paper containing all their ladies, because we have not seen any South Korean ladies at all on the Grand Prix assignments. And we know that they are very competitive based on last year's results. So giant question mark there.
I assume that we'll probably see Junwon also withdraw in the upcoming weeks, if Skate Canada even happens.
And I think importantly, I don't believe there is a way for someone to switch their Grand Prix assignments. Right?
I don't think so. Obviously, it's very unclear how these assignments happened. It seems to me that the federations were the ones who probably made the assignments, while also, like, probably looking, in the case of Junwon and Ekaterina, that they trained in Canada. So clearly, they can attend Skate Canada, right? Who was it? Wasn't it Kao Miura who found out that he was assigned to NHK via the assignment release?
I don't know if he knew he was expected to debut as a senior or even compete in the Grand Prix at all, based on his confused Instagram story caption. But yeah, I think it's just concerning that if there's no way to switch Grand Prix assignments, you're just straight up depriving someone of a Grand Prix competition at all, based on, like, a badly considered or non-up-to-date assignment. So Katia withdrawing from Grand Prix Canada, like, that was her only event. So I assume, you know, if it would have been realistic for her to make it to IDF, like, maybe she would have had a chance to compete in the Grand Prix, but now she's just straight up without a competition.
From a standpoint of, like, yes, we want the skaters to get experience, this is definitely a bigger issue for skaters from smaller federations that aren't still having domestic competitions, like Katia. I'm sure the South Korean ladies might not have gotten a Grand Prix assignment, but there are plenty of South Korean competitions currently happening domestically, so they will still get experience there. But it's still very confusing to me how these assignments were decided. So moving on, we can look to China as being a model Grand Prix event, but I don't know if I'd even call the Cup of China a Grand Prix event. It is extremely centralized, exclusively domestic field of people who only train in China, but there's only one lady currently assigned to their ladies event. But we also know that China has, over the past few months, shown excellent control of COVID, and they have had numerous other events occur in China in both entertainment and in sports, some even with audience, with minimal reported issues, reported being the key word here. This is versus, if you contrast them with, say, the US or France or the Canadian events in regions that are currently spiking with cases. And obviously the assignments for these require some sort of, if not international, still large domestic travel from, like, one side of the country to the other to get there, which might not even be really ideal. Actually, speaking of Skate Canada, the Ottawa government, as of October 9th, has announced that they are adding new indoor restrictions for the next 28 days. And these restrictions actually include prohibiting indoor sporting events. So given that Skate Canada is supposed to happen within 28 days, is Skate Canada actually happening?
It's a very good question, and I think it brings us to the big elephant in the room, which is that even at the time of recording this podcast, we have had spiking COVID cases literally by the week, especially in many of these key GP locations. So other than the Ottawa government's recent 28-day ban, we've had France COVID cases at a record high of basically 18,000 per day. We also know that as of October 9th, Russia broke its record for new daily infections in COVID. And obviously the cases in the US are not dying down. I think the last time I checked, we had about 46,000 new cases every day. So that's definitely like 4 out of 6 GP events in huge, huge doubt, even just from sort of a countrywide perspective. On the flip side, we also have had Japan considering reopening borders in October, but not to tourists. So it seems as though COVID might be slightly more under control there. But again, there are still very heavy restrictions around entry requirements and how people can travel internally within the country. And lastly, we've also had China, who probably have it the most under control. I think we've had under 100 cases for a bit, but as we mentioned previously, China is still very much inaccessible, I think, to foreign visitors. So again, just huge, huge questions at the moment, and it doesn't look as though things are going to get better in a rush, which does put a lot of pressure on skaters who have to, at least at the moment, prepare to travel internationally without really knowing whether they'll even be able to have the event waiting for them on the other side.
I think of all the events in the Grand Prix series, I'm probably most concerned about IDF because that will be the most international event of all of these events. Given that France is increasing COVID cases, given that skaters will probably be coming from all around Europe, you'll have a lot of factors that the officials of these events will need to take into account to make sure that at the very least for IDF, it will hopefully go through safely. And I don't know if they're prepared for that.
And I think speaking of safety standards, we definitely have seen the ISU guidelines being framed more as suggestions rather than mandatory steps to follow. And I think the key issue that we're seeing is the lack of uniformity in the safety guidelines around holding competitions and how they're being enforced. And we've really already seen things slip through the cracks just in the Russian test skates that happened less than a month ago. We had Sofia Samodurova competing with a fever during her short program and had to withdraw for the free skate. At least from the live stream of the Russian test skates, we saw very few volunteers and officials or coaches wearing masks or social distancing. So again, it's just an indication of the differences in the level of seriousness and compliance with these safety measures between competitions. And as far as I know, there doesn't seem to be any repercussions for, you know, competing with a fever during COVID. It just seems very risky to me to allow skaters to go ahead with these sorts of practices without any consequences, because that is a significant risk that she was taking and that was being allowed by her team for her to take during these extraordinary times. We also know several skaters who've actually gotten COVID. So we know the Russian pairs team, Evgenia Tarasova and Vladimir Morozov. Morozov does have COVID, but I believe has recovered because there was footage of them practicing again. Galiamov in the Galiamov and Mishina team also tested positive for COVID recently and had to withdraw. And we also know Dmitry Rylov posted on Instagram that his mother has progressive COVID pneumonia and is currently in hospital. So I think it just really illuminates that the risk isn't just being carried by the athletes, but by everyone that they will be going home to and that they will sort of interact with before and after the competition. So it just really highlights that this isn't just an athlete-only issue, and that should really be taken into account in these safety guidelines as well.
So for Skate America and Skate Canada International, currently they're planning to take place without an audience. For Skate America, they are going to be following the requirements set by the state of Nevada for a closed system event. So per these guidelines, personnel should treat this closed system basically as a large-scale quarantine. And so in this case, for everyone who is attending Skate America, all of the volunteers, all of the staff, all of the coaches, all the skaters, once they enter the New Orleans, they will ideally not leave New Orleans until the competition is over. So Skate America has also set out a set of guidelines that everyone attending Skate America will have to follow. So 14 days before arrival, all persons will be required to start daily health screening. 7 days from arrival, they have been requested to reduce public interactions to lower the risk of being exposed. And then once they're arrived, they are going to verify what on their Healthy Roster app, which is the app that they're using to do their daily health screenings, that they have a green screen. They will get their temperature checked and they will get a COVID test that will be administered by the University of Las Vegas Medicine. And all persons, after they get tested, will be required to quarantine in their hotel room until they get a negative test result. Afterwards, they are required to have daily temperature checks. Or, depending on their location, they might be required to have a temperature check in and out various locations within the Orleans campus. If they do have a fever over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, they will be tested for COVID again. If a person receives a positive test, then they will be asked to take another test in order to rule out a false positive. And then if they do get a second positive test, they will be required to quarantine for 14 days and per the rest of the state of Nevada requirements.
Consider all of that time, you know, and it's presumably when they're quarantined in their hotel room, like they will not have access to training, they'll not be able to sort of carry out their usual activities.
Yeah, everyone is required to have arrived for this event the Monday before it starts. Typically, you would see this event start on the Wednesday with practices, with the actual competition starting on Thursday. So they are ideally giving everyone attending 24 to 48 hours time for quarantining. But still, as Lei mentioned, that is time that they are just going to be in the hotel room, not being able to train or do much exercise outside of what yoga they can do in their hotel room.
And I think, I mean, to Skate America's credit, I think that is probably the best that they can do in terms of the thoroughness and the extensiveness of these protective measures. But I think it really just illuminates how little in terms of funding and in terms of precautionary measures that ISU and figure skating as a general sport has to work with, especially when you contrast that to, for example, the NBA's current bubble that they're working with, which reportedly cost $170 million to create and to run. But I think, you know, it tells you a lot that that investment would be justified considering the amount of revenue that they're taking in for broadcasting these competitions in the NBA. But like, just to give you a sense of how different or how much heightened the bubble is for the NBA, they have confined all their players into a completely isolated geographic area. They have to quarantine for 14 days and take continual tests in order to even enter the bubble. And as soon as you leave the bubble, you have to be isolated for 10 days after. So, you know, unlike the GP series where certain numbers of skaters are being thrown about in various different locations, everyone's being centralized into this one area where they'll have, you know, daily COVID tests of players and staff. All food is being prepared in the bubble. No family or friends or audiences are really allowed unless they go through similarly rigorous testing. And there's even like a snitch hotline apparently to report people violating the rules within. So it just tells you basically that there is a lot more that is being done to try and make this bubble work. So any kind of, it only really takes one gap, right, in the bubble for things to go wrong. And without the right resources, there are a lot of doubts around whether it's even possible to kind of maintain a safe environment despite all of these precautions.
Yeah, I agree. I think at the very least, Skate America is doing the most that they can do, given the limited resources and the amount of travel that the skaters do have to take. Conversely, NHK Trophy is actually not requiring COVID testing for athletes or accredited staff when they arrive for the event. So they're only doing the 14-day health monitoring before the event, which one seems fairly risky to me. And then you have to remember that NHK Trophy is actually going to have an audience. So it's not even going to be a closed system like we have at Skate America, because you will have audience members going in and out of the competition. So overall, seems extremely risky. I do know that they're probably doing this because Japan has had like very minimal number of cases per day. I think they're at roughly, 500 cases per day over the past few weeks. So they feel like this is okay. But at the same time, given our current situation, I would prefer as much precaution as possible, especially when you realize that the audience members potentially could interact with the skaters, even accidentally. I know that organizer will probably try as much as possible to keep the audience away from the skaters, but one accidental like interaction could lead a skater to getting COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it comes down to the requirements being pretty much at the whims of the federation organizing the event. And I think if we take a step back as well in terms of, you know, just from a competitive and fairness perspective, I think it really makes a psychological difference to have a no audience competition versus a competition with an audience, right? And the wildly different safety measures being put into place in each country also means that athletes will be under very different levels of stress before, during and after competitions. So I think, you know, if you're an athlete competing in Skate America, for example, and you've got to go through all of those quarantine measures and you've got to be tested, like that will naturally be a lot more disruptive than if you were just allowed to check your temperature and generally kind of have an okay health check and then go about your competition preparation like as normal. So I think it really hardly promotes kind of fair comparisons between the challenges that skaters have to go through between each event. And I think the other thing to note is that many skaters in the off season and in these intervening months haven't had equal amounts of access to ice time, or at the very least have had much more restricted ice time due to public rinks being closed. So though we know that injuries can happen basically at any time during training, I think under time pressure to get competition ready, which is usually, you know, a process that takes a good amount of weeks and months to prepare for and manage your peaking and manage all of your run-throughs, I think it does increase the risk of injury to be asking skaters to prepare for these big competitions and be in competition shape, especially given the short amount of notice that was provided to them.
I agree. There have been several skaters who have already gotten injury. And while we do know that skaters having injuries is not a new issue within the sport, we could attest that many of these injuries that have happened over the past few weeks could have happened because skaters have been rushing to get the practice that they need in order to compete this season.
So I think due to all of these factors, I really do think that either the ISU needs to step up and just cancel the Grand Prix series in general, or at least don't pretend that we're still having one as usual. I think especially in relation to these current developments of spiking cases in these countries, I think it's a good opportunity for skaters who are privileged to be in these Grand Prix countries to get some competition time. But I think in light of all these concerns, it's sort of incumbent on the organizing body to show a degree of leadership and to know when to focus their energies instead on perhaps the second half of the season or even the next season, instead of trying to sort of save what feels like a quickly sinking ship. And I think, you know, notice of whether or not these events are going ahead or might be at risk of cancellation is also important for skaters to know as much in advance so that they can adjust their training and aim for the closest feasible competition, which could be like in many months from now, or it could be their national events. But I just think at the moment, it feels like the ISU is really trying to spread their resources very thinly across all of these events, and instead kind of not managing much for all of these.
Yeah, I do think that there is some way to hold an event safely, but the ISU needs to step up and actually put forward stricter requirements and guidelines that every country needs to follow, so we have these consistent safety checks in place across all of these countries. Because I think, like, ultimately the Grand Prix series being held is still a very important experiment in the eyes of the ISU, so they can see and learn from these events before trying to actually host events like Europeans, Four Continents, and World Championships, which will have to be international given the nature of those events. But I don't think that they've put enough effort into getting everything they need in place at these events to actually learn correctly.
I think almost it feels like they spread themselves too thin trying to get all six of the events to happen. Whereas if they just concentrated on maybe one or two Grand Prix events and tried to use that as a way to test out some of these safety measures and how to properly manage athletes coming in from outside, it might have been more productive than now sort of frantically seeing all these flurries of withdrawals and seeing the rinks shut down and cases in countries worsen. Like, I don't envy anyone currently on the organizing board, but I do think that it is really important for them to consider that the bigger fight or the bigger challenge for them is actually coming up in the second half of the season. And so it would be really, really important for us to know, and I think for the skaters as well, to know what might be in store for them.
So our shout out of the week, our shout out of like the past 8 months, goes to Mai Mihara, who had her first competition back after taking last season off due to health issues. Her smile at the end of that program of her free skate was so like charming and just was like instant sunshine, and I just missed her so much. So I'm happy to see that she's happy, even if I'm like still worried about her health. I'm happy that she's happy, and you could see how happy she is on the ice. So welcome back, Mai. I don't know how the season will go, but hopefully the season treats you well.
Absolutely. I do worry that she does seem a little fragile still, and I definitely hope that she is getting all of the support that she needs. But yeah, I do think that it takes a very, very strong skater to face all of those health issues and still decide to come back to the ice. And so I think the sport is richer for her being back in there.
Okay, well, thank you for listening. We hope to see you again for our next episode. Thanks to everyone who helped research for this episode, and Evie for editing, and Gab for our graphic design.
And also our transcribing and quality control team. If you want to get in touch with us, please feel free to contact us via our website, inthelowpodcast.com, or on Twitter or Tumblr. You can find our episodes on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify.
If you enjoy the show and want to help support the team, please consider making a donation to us on our Ko-fi page, and we'd like to give a huge thank you to all of our listeners who have contributed to our team thus far. You can find all the links to all of our social media pages and our Ko-fi on the website.
If you're listening on iTunes, please consider leaving a rating and review if you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening. This has been Lei
and Yogita. See you guys next episode.